This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Liat Stelic. She's the Senior Vice President and Publisher at William Morrow, division of Harper. It's actually William Morrow, Harper Voyager, Avon Books, and you're also in charge of Impulse, which is a digital imprint. So you have many, many responsibilities at Harper. How are you, Liat?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Well, sure. Well, maybe you tell me just a little bit about your background, how you started in the book business, and how you got to be where you are, you know, doing what you're doing today.
Sure. I started in publishing, gosh, it's like 16 years ago now. I started as an editorial assistant at one of the divisions at Simon & Schuster, and I felt I was lucky enough to find a job where I was getting to talk about books every day with other people who clearly loved books and loved reading, and I haven't left ever since.
So you've done, I mean, you started in editorial.
I did start in editorial. I had a various background. I started in editorial for very beginning, and then I moved into the marketing department, and I mm-hmm. spent a lot of time in the marketing department, and then from there I sort of segued into the publisher's office, which often oversees the marketing as well as a lot of the different business aspects and
right.
editorial.
So
well.
and that's so today you're okay. essentially a publisher.
Exactly.
So you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Impulse, partially because this podcast series is a lot about the future, and Impulse in a lot of ways represents a foray by Harper, you know, a large company with a, you know, sort of fits the description, you know, of being a traditional publisher with a very large stake in print books. But clearly you're looking to the future in, I mean, obviously you're publishing lots of ebooks. There's no, you know, that's not anything new or different, but the idea of having a born digital imprint within the larger company, I think, is unusual. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how Impulse, you know, what was the thinking behind Impulse, and how do you see it as an imprint within the larger entity?
Sure. You know, sort of the impetus for Impulse was really us, particularly my editorial team, thinking about some of our authors who at the time were struggling in the traditional space because of the lack of physical retailers, particularly with the closing of Borders and Walden. That was a big loss for genre fiction side. And trying to think about the digital space as maybe a way to sort of find and grow new talented authors in a way we had sort of done in the past in a more traditional physical model. So that's kind of where we started, and we knew the possibility was there because obviously there were a lot of, you know, different small presses doing similar type things, and we felt that we could kind of combine the best of both worlds and that sort of try to have a little bit of a startup mentality. So we pulled together a real small team within our Avon Books group. But the nice thing is that we did have sort of the expertise of the Avon group, so from an editorial, from a publicity and the marketing side, so we already knew that audience and knew those consumers and knew the readers. So the nice thing, I think, from attracting talent, too, is that the authors felt that they were going to get the same quality and level of engagement with the Avon team as you would if you had a traditional deal, yet we were able to sort of do things in a little bit of a different model and think about it differently and obviously move at a much faster pace than we would normally do in a traditional type scenario.
Right. I was just going to ask you specifically how is it different, and I was going to ask if speed is one of the, because that's an obvious difference. I mean, although it is true, you know, I think people in publishing know this often, people outside publishing don't realize it, that the editorial process has to be the same for a print book or as a digital book. You're still having to edit, proofread,
sure.
you know, do the developmental work, think about marketing. Some marketing has to take place in advance. So there is still a cycle in digital publishing. It is clearly you should be able to be faster because you don't have to worry about the physical supply chain. So when you say faster, how does that work? You know, like,
well, I mean, it's a good question, and I think one of the things that maybe surprised us from our side is that I think the time for a traditional publication is twofold. One is, yes, you want to be sure you have the editorial engagement back and forth expertise that happens, as well as from a, you know, copy editing, and, you know, so we have the quality of a insured in any sort of book that we publish, no matter what format. That's very important. But the other real sort of thing that happens on a time continuum is the sell-in process for a book and a traditional retailer. So there's a whole process in place, both within HarperCollins as well as from a sales side going into sell into accounts. And they need a certain amount of lead time for with everything all prepared to be able to go in to sell it. And then they go back and get the orders and then they print. So there's a sort of a big time gap in there that the book is actually almost always done at that point. It's just this other piece that slows you down. So in a digital side where you don't actually have, you're not actually selling to a retailer, you're really, you're working with them on promotional opportunities, but you're really just uploading files to retailer sites. So there's a different time component there that we were able to sort of take out completely. I mean, we often are doing books without completely rushing it through, that when we get delivered from a manuscript, we can have a book available in 6 to 8 weeks on the retailer site. So that's, you know, that's a huge change from our sort of normal process. Now, obviously, from when an offer turns it in, we want to be sure we have enough back and forth time to get that quality right. So, but we're on a much tighter, probably 3 to 6 month schedule versus a traditional year plus publication schedule.
Now, and has it changed your workflow? And you know, I think about,
right,
you know, production. On this, now we're going to the production side, and some people aren't interested in this stuff at all, but I am. And that is, let's say, you know, in a print environment, you have a book designer, you have a you'll do typography, you've got to think about cast off, how long it's going to be, the production people have to think about how many, what's the size, what's the paper, what's the format. And, you know, and a lot of it involves, you know, working in Quark or in InDesign, whatever it is that people use. And but in a digital environment, it's possible to work in Word, or some people have moved to XML markup. And I'm just curious whether you've seen any of that. Has that been meaningful to you in terms of how you produce books?
Well, we have, you know, again, part of it was trying to sort of create a mini model within a larger corporation. So we have been able to do a few things on the workflow side differently than we would do in our traditional. And we've been working on that as we go along and trying to perfect that a little bit. We still like to keep, obviously, we want to ensure the quality that is still there. So we're trying to work with certain level of copywriters and that are, you know, in a similar fashion that we do on the traditional side. But in terms of streamlining a piece of it and not having it and taking it, thinking of it as a book that's going to start as a digital file versus it's going to start one way and then end as a printed book. So we have been able to sort of make some changes along the way just by sheer nature of how we're coming at the end product.
Right. And I assume the other thing that is really different, which you touched on, is marketing.
Right.
You know, clearly, in the old model, and don't want to keep saying the old model because it still exists, but in the
traditional
publishing,
right, right.
It you know, you work on your marketing and PR. You're basically aiming for a target window when books will be in stores, so that your marketing and PR will be fulfilled. That is, people can find the book when there is some noise about it, some signal through the noise about it in, you know, in their world. But in digital, you don't have to worry about, you know, books on display in a bookstore. You think about, because books are on display in the ebook stores all the time. And so I guess, you know, does that change the way you think about marketing? Do you think about, you know, building over time more rather than aiming for a particular window? You know, obviously for you can think about communities of readers because you know, even Impulse is publishing within a particular set of readership. But maybe I don't want to do all the talking. I feel like I'm talking instead of asking.
No. It is a good point. I mean, I think we have to think about, you know, overall, we're thinking about marketing in a different fashion anyway. We have to be much more focused on the readers and reaching direct to consumer versus, you know, going through the retailer to reach the consumers. So certainly having a more direct relationship and engagement with the readers is important to us, and that's something we've been really working on the impulse side. From your point about the timing, I think it's true in that you don't have to, everything doesn't have to sort of wait to happen until you have physical books in store. It can be a much more of sort of a rolling campaign, but I think what we'd still do try to do is try to bring different pieces of a campaign together in a concentrated period of time, whether that doesn't have to be the first week, it could be the third week, it could be the fifth week, it could be the 10th week of on sale, but because you're never going to have that issue of, oh no, the books are on their way back to the being returned at this point. But whatever that concentrated moment is, we try to get all those pieces to come together as best we possibly can at one time, because that helps drive awareness and it helps drive sales on a certain period of time, and then that drives you up in the rankings on accounts, which helps drive awareness and sort of becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. I think the biggest challenge is that when you know, if you're buying books on a device or if you're looking searching online, technically the shelf space is unlimited, the screen space is very limited. So it's very hard to discover books unless you know exactly what you're looking for. So part of the marketing challenge is to introduce readers to new authors that they don't know. And that involves working closely with the online retailers to try to secure promotions. That involves a dynamic pricing where you're really watching what's happening in the market and you're watching what your opportunity might be and changing your price. You know, you can change it daily, basically, and sort of see how that affects your sales. And then traditionally on a publicity and marketing side, we're still doing, you know, we're doing e-galleys on these impulse titles. So they're not physical printed galleys, but they're still going out to the bloggers and they're going out to the reviewers. We want to be sure those things are coming together at the right time. And then we have a pretty robust following on our Avon site and our Avon Facebook page. And we obviously do a lot of merchandising and cross-marketing there as well.
Well, now that actually is a good lead-in, because I wanted to ask you about, you know, in the context of publishing, you know, and it is, again, people have talked about this to death, that in, you know, in traditional publishing, publishers have been more or less disconnected from readers, having to go through the bookstore, let's say, or the librarian as the intermediary. And so you do marketing and you do promotion, but you never really... Traditionally, at least, most publishers didn't connect directly to those readers,
right.
Even though they might. I mean, they might touch them. It's not that they never had any contact, but now I think online, and of course with the opportunities that you have with email to communicate with Facebook and other, you know, all the other options you can communicate with people, it does require a different kind of thinking, I think, than publishers have had to master in the past. So does
right.
that, you know, do you have people that are on your staff, or whether they're on the larger, you know, Harper staff, who have kind of begun to learn, and maybe they've not more than begun, maybe they've really mastered how to interact with readers? It's not just sell to, but interact with. And, you know, that's hard.
Right. Yes, it is. It is a little bit of a different model. And I think it's actually the impulse for us, model has been a great sort of helping learning curve for, you know, all of our publishing units, because it's a way that we're going to have to be going towards, which we already are in many fashions, but booming to do much more of in the future. And it is a different, it's a different conundrum for each book, because obviously every book is different and every author has a different engagement with their fans on social media, and obviously we work closely with them, but what we are able to do is sort of use the power of all of our different authors to sort of almost syndicate that author's books to many other outlets and many other places. So the discoverability part of it is a challenge and reaching the readers, but I think the more that we do in that space, the more we get to know who those fans are and what they want. One of the things that we actually just started on the Avon page, on the Facebook page, our Facebook page, is we are doing this thing called Avon Addicts. And basically you had to apply, and we got a huge number of applications for this coveted spot, and we had 25 winners, and those are going to be our kind of super fans on the site, and they're going to get galleys, and they're going to get sort of swag and stuff ahead of time. Key books that we're doing each month are going to get e-galleys for the impulse titles, and they're kind of our, you know, brand advocates in a way, and hopefully they'll be able to be out in the in digital space talking about the books and, you know, talking about Avon, and you know, it's kind of a six-month super fan program. And the idea is that sort of our fans and our readers are probably our, you know, not only best customers, probably also our best marketers too.
Sure, they're your advocates.
Exactly.
And you, I mean, every, yeah, it's sort of the gold for any marketer is to get the, you know, find the customers who love you and
right.
and work with. Now, so is this, that's for not just for Impulse, that's for Avon overall, or is that just Impulse?
It is for Avon overall, but it's sort of one of the. The impetus for it was with Impulse and trying to think about how we're going to market when we don't have a physical presence in store.
So do you find, and maybe this is going too much into the weeds, but that having these conversational relationships with your readers changes anything about how you publish? Do you? I'm not saying that you ask people in advance, you know, would you like to have a book on X? Because that's not a really smart question. But
right.
there are ways of talking to readers, and of course many readers, and some of those most, you know, the most involved readers have a lot to say about, you know, about books and authors
right.
and publishing. And it, you know, I'm just curious, as you get closer to customers, does that influence, not necessarily what you publish, but it, although it could, but how
right.
you publish, you know, and how you talk to readers about the books. Maybe, you know, maybe this is what you're going to learn from having this program, but I'm just,
right.
you know, wondering whether you've figured anything out yet.
Well, I think part of the reason we started it was to sort of be able to have more of a dialogue. And I think, you know, one of the things we talked about talking to the addicts about, like, throwing different titles out there with them or throwing out, you know, different cover directions and sort of getting that kind of feedback. I think as we go forward, we might want, authors might want, and they probably do this already, it's some on their own Facebook page, but sort of have a little bit of a, you know, what would you like to see from me if I was going to write anything? Do you want another Sinister novel, you know, or another different type of series, or what is it that you're thinking about? And I think, you know, you can't, obviously, you don't want to completely have the crowd lead the creative process, but I think the more that they feel vested in it and they feel a part of it, I think that particularly the authors that, you know, that we've worked with have found that the more they feel that, the more they feel engaged and want to be part of that next book and that next success story.
Yeah, so, I think that's true. I think also I've heard from some writers who have asked structural questions, you know, like,
right.
here's a character I really love, but I can't figure out how to make this character work. And then the readers say, well, you should dump that character because it's, forget it, it's no good. Or they might say, you know, I really would like you to end this book differently. And sometimes they're right. You know, it's
right.
it's not that,
right.
you know, it's not this idea that readers are going to make the writer less of a writer and less
right.
of a creative person.
Right.
I think.
I mean,
that,
I think it, you're right, and I think it has to be that probably level of detail has to be left between the author and how comfortable they feel about that. You know, I mean, every author is going to have sort of a different continuum of where they want to have people involved in the process.
Yeah, some none, someone
exactly.
none.
And some we have who would love to. Yeah, they'd love to sort of have them look at every chapter and, you know, give them feedback. So I think that is a. It's certainly something that we've been looking at and that different authors are sort of already doing in each in their own ways. But it is important to sort of have to feel a little bit of ownership of something with the author, and part of the creative process, I think, just sort of helps people kind of rally around the book.
So, you know, I noticed that on the site for Impulse, and I presume, you know, this applies also to other imprints.
Right.
You've got a bookstore. It actually, you've got a category, you've got an ebook store and a bookstore. So you literally separate the, you know, the pipe at the point
right.
where I'm looking at your books and I can say, I want to look at ebooks. I want to look at print books.
Right.
And then, and you send, I noticed that you do send people to retailers. So you're not selling
right.
the
We're
bookstore.
We're not selling
self.
Direct. Right.
And although it was interesting because I noticed on your shelves, there's no pricing. The only pricing you get is, so you're not showing like list price or anything.
Right, right.
And I assume that was also a conscious decision, you know, in terms of, because you don't want, or maybe you do, maybe It has to do with not wanting to show the price differentials that your customers might have.
Right. And I think that that's sort of left to the retailer to, sort of post as they will. I think then you'd have to sort of be, changing the pricing every time they change their price on the physical side,
Right.
right?
Although you could show the list price and then
Yes, you could show the list
you
price,
could,
correct.
but you decided not to. I'm not saying one, I have no idea whether it one is better than the other.
Right.
But again, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I noticed that at least in the e-book store, I don't see everybody, all the retailers. And maybe, oh, actually I do. If I click, oh, you have an interesting way of doing this. So I just clicked on a link that I hadn't seen before. So I can go to my device and pick a retailer. That's pretty interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually something I don't think I've seen widely deployed. I think that's really good. But there's no Google eBooks, and I'm just curious about that. Again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but no Google, no IndieBound. And it was, I wonder if that was just momentary accident or whether there's a an issue.
No, there's no issue. I think it was, I probably should defer to my corporate people who probably would have a better answer on that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I
I
didn't
don't
mean,
think it was, no, it's okay. It's not like a really strategic, I don't have a strategic answer for you as to why or why not. I mean, I think the real thing that we think about when we think about HarperCollins website, we don't really think about it as a direct selling vehicle. It's more of a marketing vehicle.
No, and I think that most publishers, I think, feel that you have to honor your channels. And so you, I think, this, I think that's what you're doing here.
Right.
So, as you look ahead, from the vantage point of what you're learning at Impulse, do you think that, how do you see, this is sort of the million-dollar question that everybody wants to know. Like, as more ebooks are selling, and I know, I think this year they've kind of plateaued a little bit, but probably more devices and better software and more people being, it starts to spread. But there is
Right.
this question that you come up against, and that is, what's the limit of the penetration of e taking, what percentage of the business goes to ebooks before you reach the point where, for at least a while, you've conquered everyone who wants to read digitally, and everyone else really still likes paper, and they're not going to change. Because people, readers are going to do what they want to do. And,
Right.
maybe if reader, if you could say, well, if the device prices went down to zero, more people would take them. But there may be a point where you take a free reader because somebody gave it to you,
Right.
but then maybe you really still like books. So the idea still is there a, I mean, and I don't expect anybody to really know the answer, but it's more a talking point to get into this concept of, what is going to happen? How does this play out? And since you have this experience now of working in a digital, a born digital environment, what do you think?
Well, I think, look, we would be more than thrilled if there's always a large market for print books. I mean, I don't think that to us, that's obviously where we started, and we have great working relationships with all the accounts, and we have that sort of model down pat. I think that the interesting thing about the e side is that I think it probably has grown faster than people, at least in the industry, had anticipated. And I'm not sure where you say suddenly it's going to completely level off or just stop. I mean, I know that I'm sure that they've seen that with the cell phone market or something, but I think that we're so far behind that kind of curve yet at least from where we sit, the possibilities still seem very large.
Yeah, well, and also I think you could say cell phones are kind of re they become they're required objects.
Right.
Probably e-readers may not fall, may not fall into that category of being 100%
Right, but
adopted
you
by
may
the
have
world.
find a lot more people reading on their phones, right?
Oh
So
yeah,
there's,
oh
so
yeah.
there's plenty of other ways that we see as ways to sort of deliver the content to people. growing with obviously the different platforms that arrive and all of that. I think that, you know, that I guess that is the question is how long is there a parallel market for things that are just the device that's just for that or primarily for that. I mean, obviously the Kindle Fire and the Nook Color do other things, but I still think your sort of core user is the heavy reader.
No, that's yeah. I think that's actually a good point too, that the shape of how people use the devices is really still emerging, and that
right.
you know you probably have a core group of people who love the black and white readers because they're convenient. They do the job that they do really well. They're not that expensive.
Right.
You know that. And the statistics I think that we saw recently were that the heaviest readers are the ones who have adopted digital readers more quickly, and
right.
they're reading lots more because the devices make it so easy, as we all know.
Right.
So, but aside from that, I wonder, now the other thing, of course, is, you know, I've always thought that if digital takes away from print, as you know, and there are other factors that are taking away from print, you know, as you said earlier, the number of retailers, the number of outlets that we have for print books has declined radically. So, you know, as book print runs decline, and you know this as a publisher,
right.
costs go up, and the unit cost goes up, and you know the amortization of sunk costs is has to be applied to a smaller number of physical objects. So the theory is, doesn't that put pressure on print books to get more expensive over time? Even though there are probably other factors that would weigh against that, at a certain point, you'd have to recognize your costs, and then theoretically the print books become more expensive and set up a cycle of encouraging more digital uptake because ebooks are going to stay cheaper than print books. And as the gulf gets larger, more and more people will make economic decisions. Even though they love print books, they're going to say, I don't want to pay $35 for a hardcover. If I can buy the ebook for anything less, I rather would.
Right.
So
I mean, I think part of it too is maybe, you know, on the physical side, giving a little bit more value to those books, and maybe the quality of some of those books and the type of books that become and continue to sell well successfully in print may be different than what are the successful books that sell digitally.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have a large, and obviously these things change quickly as the devices continue to change, but on the Morrow side, we have a large cookbook list. And despite all the apps and all this cool stuff that's happening, you know, we're working on some great enhanced ebook ideas and concepts for some of these cookbook authors. But that said, I mean, that market has not taken off in the same way that obviously like the genre fiction and or sort of mainstream commercial fiction has taken off. I think that the nature of the devices just lend themselves to that right now. And obviously there's a huge upside and possibility for some of these, you know, four color design books at some point, but it's a different, but we're not there yet, I would say, and that's a sort of different curve that can happen and can change as we see things move ahead.
Right, so maybe the physical books, maybe you have a bifurcated business where the certain kinds of physical books are going to be predominant, and in other genres, ebooks become maybe take over the whole thing.
That's
an interesting thought. You know, that certain books will have continued value as physical objects that will supersede all other factors.
Right, and then I think you still are going to have the collectors and those people who want, you know, the Neil Gaiman hardcover per se. You know, they still want to have that first printing of American Gods, and they want to have him sign that book for them, or they want to have the nice end papers, and they want the digital edition too. I mean, I think, you know, it's a little bit of a different model, but you know, you have seen sort of the collector record people coming back in a way, you know, sort of that LP stuff that, and sometimes the record companies are bundling a digital edition with a record. So you can have, you know, collectors can kind of have both. So I think that may happen too, where you still want to have some sort of display or a shelf or a gift or, you know, something that's a physical thing that, but still might want to have that digital piece for just ease and enjoyment of reading. And I know, I mean, you know, I'm not sure there's any market research yet to back me up on this, but there's a lot of people who say, well, I like to have the physical book when I'm at home reading in my bed, But when I'm traveling or when I'm, on the subway or on the train, I love to have my e-reader
Right.
with me.
Oh, so which raises the last question I think we have time for you to talk
Okay.
about, and that is the natural extension of what you just said. Is it possible that we would have a bundling sales model, which is you buy that print book, you automatically get access to the digital so that you can do just what you just described. I'm reading it
Right.
at home, but when I leave the house, I don't want to carry the big book. And so we haven't seen anybody really do that on any large enough scale to make it meaningful. And I believe, as I've thought about it, there are lots of impediments. There are hard technical issues there, selling issues that make it more difficult. But I'm wondering if that will happen, or do you see that happening because it is such a compelling way to sell books?
I think the thing is, I think that we are still so, this is such a sort of new thing that's happening in the market, that there's a lot of possibilities and opportunities and ideas and different things that are going to develop, that being probably some version of that coming down the road probably soon enough. But I just don't think we're not quite there yet, and obviously we need to be doing things that are in tandem with our retailers and both physical and digital, and making things work, from their sides as well. But I think that that's just one of the sort of possibilities that have yet to really be fully explored, and that are certainly not that far in the future.
Oh, I hope you're right, because and I think you're right, because it does feel like we have a long way to go.
Right.
I really enjoyed talking to you. I think we could have talked a lot longer. You're great to talk to, and I really appreciate your spending some time because I know you're busy.
Great. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Liat. This has
Okay.
been Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I've been talking to Liat Stelic, who is the Vice President and Publisher at William Morrow. Thanks.